Welcome to All Things Marine, Hawaii's thought-provoking show dedicated to marine science and ocean conservation. All Things Marine, brought to you by Kosi Island Earth and the University of Hawaii, Hawaii Institute of Marine Biology. And now, here's your host, the marine science gal, Carly Weiner.
Aloha, I'm Carly Weiner, your marine science girl on this Tuesday, January 19th. And today we are going to take a look at some noteworthy marine science and conservation programs to watch in 2016. Hope everybody had a great start to the new year and an even better week. We have a wide variety of guests today, including Samantha Brook, the Marine National Monuments Program Manager for NOAA, Webb Pinner from Ocean Data Rat, and Professor Mackenzie Manning, Assistant Professor in the Biology and Marine Biology Department at Kapi'olani Community College. So without further ado, we're going to just jump right in. Our first guest is Samantha Brook from NOAA, the Marine National Monuments Program Manager. Welcome to the show, Samantha.
Hi, Carly. It's great to be here.
I'm really excited to have you here to talk about the National Monuments Program. We have had in the past a bunch of focus on the Papahana Mukuakea Marine National Monument, and we've also talked to whale sanctuary folks, and we've had a bunch of focus on marine protected areas, but we really haven't talked a lot about the deepest spot on the planet. So looking forward to jumping in there.
Yeah, it's definitely an exciting area where a lot of research and conservation is going on. We have some exciting things to talk about today, so I'm really grateful for the opportunity to share that with everyone.
Excellent. So let's look at an overview first before we get specific to the Mariana Trench. First, marine national monuments. What are they? How long have they been around? And what exactly are they doing?
Sure. That's actually the number one question people have for us. Marine national monuments are basically large marine protected areas in the ocean. We use a lot of different terminology to talk about marine protected areas. A lot of people are familiar with sanctuaries. We have a sanctuary right here in Hawaii. But a marine protected area called the Marine National Monument is actually established under the Antiquities Act through a presidential proclamation. People may be familiar with some of the monuments that we have on land, like Devil's Tower in Wyoming. That's the first monument that was ever established. But there are monuments in the ocean, and in total they protect over 1.27 million square kilometers of the ocean. So there are four marine national monuments, and you mentioned the Papahana Mokuakea Marine National Monument in the Northwest Hawaiian Islands. That was the first one established by President Bush in 2006. There are actually three more marine national monuments in the Pacific. There's Rose Atoll Marine National Monument down in American Samoa, Mariana's Trench in the Commonwealth of the Northern Marianas Islands, and the Pacific Remote Islands, which is made up of seven islands and atolls scattered across the Pacific.
So it seems like a lot of the monuments are based in the Pacific region. Are there any national monuments outside of the Pacific Ocean?
There are no actual totally marine national monuments outside of the Pacific. There is Buck Island Monument, and that's down in Florida, and that actually does contain some water. But for marine national monuments that we're talking about today, they're only in the Pacific here, so we really are unique.
Yeah. Well, I'm okay with a Pacific-centric monuments program, that's for sure. Now, you mentioned land monuments being first. So what are some of the challenges and differences between land monuments and marine monuments? I mean, obviously, marine spans a large area, and it's more fluid. You can't just put up a fence and be like, okay, here's our monument.
Yeah, the monuments are all very, very large, and they're very far away from places where people live. It takes 2 or 3 days to get to one of the monuments from, for example, Saipan in the Northern Marianas Islands, or from here in Hawaii to get all the way up to the Papahana Mokuakea Monument. So it's very hard for us to reach them and to conduct scientific research. And it's also a challenge for people to visualize these places and to connect with them and appreciate their protection. But just to highlight how unusual it is that we have these places protected, but we know so little about them. Imagine an entire mountain chain comprised of the tallest mountains in the world that nobody had ever seen. That is actually what we have here in the Pacific that's protected in our monuments.
Amazing. And so what are some of the things that you do to get people to visualize or take interest in these remote areas?
That's really a challenge for us. We definitely rely on those scientific research expeditions that go out and visit them. We try to document those through websites and outreach materials and to support film and video efforts to document them. We have actually a monument video that's available online called Our Deepest Waters that protects talks about the Marine National Monuments and what's in them. We also have a great musical video for kids called The Marvelous Musical Report on the Marine National Monuments, and I encourage people to check those out. They'll be on our website.
Oh, that sounds like a lot of fun. I want to check that out. Now, the monuments obviously differ a little bit from place to place. And can you describe a little bit about some of the differences between, let's say, the Papahanaumokuakea Marine National Monument and the Mariana Trench?
Sure. Papahanaumokuakea is probably the one that's familiar to most people right here in Hawaii. And we can imagine that a lot of the things that are in that monument are very similar to what we have here in Hawaii, but maybe in a better ecological state. Out in the Marianas region, the monument actually protects some truly unique places, including some of the deepest known spots on Earth and a Grand Canyon of the ocean, the Marianas Trench, which is actually 120 times larger than the Grand Canyon here on the mainland in the U.S. And it actually includes a lot of hydrothermal vents and submarine volcanoes, which are those bubbling, roiling underwater volcanoes that you may have seen in documentaries and on TV. But we actually have those protected here in the U.S. And it's hard to imagine what those are like, but there's really unique creatures and communities of species living down there that are extremely understudied.
And so you talked a little bit about these underwater volcanoes and hydrothermal vents. How do we know those exist, and what kind of protections does the monument afford to them?
Well, we have some amazing research that NOAA does and some of the other researchers out there, both in the United States and in other countries, where they take remotely operated vehicles down and they film them. And we have some of that footage available on our website through NOAA's Office of Pacific Marine Environmental Laboratory. So that's fun for folks to check out. We have some of that footage in our videos. Hydrothermal vents can also be discovered through ocean chemistry and things like that. So there's some ways to get to better understand it through just ship work. But the key point with hydrothermal vents is how vulnerable they are. I'll never forget when I visited Yellowstone as a child, there were all these signs about not throwing anything into the water of those cool hot pots and beautiful mineral springs. And that's because they're so sensitive to damage. And these places underwater are just as sensitive. We just don't think about it that way. So if we protect them, they'll be here for the future and for us to study and learn about and provide a window on what's happening underwater in the deep sea and in our ocean's crust and underneath.
So the hydrothermal vent areas that are protected under the Mariana Trench, from what I've understood from some of the scientific literature, the species that you're finding there are different than in other trenches all over the world. So can you describe some of the species that you've seen or that NOAA has found in the Mariana Trench area and if they get any special protections in this monument region?
Sure, there are some really neat species down there, and I'm not a hydrothermal vent expert, but what I think is really interesting is one thing we're learning is that the species at one hydrothermal vent may be totally different than those at the other hydrothermal vents that aren't even that far away, and that's probably because they've adapted to the very specific conditions at that place. We found some shellfish that are surviving in the midst of these highly acidic and boiling waters. There's actually a really neat flatfish that's adapted to live at Daikoku Seamount. So we've got some really special places where these different animals are living, and we don't even really understand whether or not those communities are related to one another. So we don't know if we damage one, will those species be able to survive at a similar location nearby? So there's really a lot for us to learn about these places.
Yeah, absolutely. And with them being so remote, it's not always easy to get out there and research them. And how do you deal with enforcement in these regions?
Sure. The enforcement question, it's definitely a challenge for all of us when we talk about trying to patrol an area that's so large and vast. We have a lot of partnerships through the Coast Guard and through the Department of Defense, as well as within NOAA, we have our own Office of Law Enforcement. So we rely heavily on those partnerships, as well as on VMS, which we use to check and see if there's any fishing activities in the areas. Sometimes people aren't aware of the boundaries or of what's permitted or not permitted in the monuments, so we also spend a lot of time conducting outreach and education to communities.
And I think that's something that your office does extremely well. Can you share some of the examples and work you've done with the communities in Guam and CNMI around the Mariana Trench region?
Well, one of the things that we did this past year was hold a Why Do We Explore education workshop. It's actually a teacher training initiative that NOAA does. And the purpose of that is to get teachers up to speed on the curriculum, the Why Do We Explore curriculum, which explains some of NOAA's research as well as why we want to go look at these deep sea places. So we actually held that last year and it was very well received and the teachers seemed really excited. And because we're going to be going to the Marianas region with the Okeanos Explorer, which is NOAA's research vessel for exploration, it's already 2016. we're really looking forward to working with some of those teachers and the students who've been taking the class, classwork of the Why Do We Explore, to bring them right up to participate in the Okeanos Explorer, which is a really amazing opportunity because the Okeanos Explorer streams its video live, so everyone anywhere can participate over the internet in our research.
Yeah, and I think you provide a very good segue there to 2016. Sort of the theme we're trying to look at is exciting new things happening, and I'm definitely looking forward to the Explorer vessel being in the Mariana Trench and seeing what they discover with those ROV dives. What else is planned for 2016?
Well, the Okeanos Explorer is going to be coming back here to Hawaii and doing some more research beginning at the end of February, and it's also going to be visiting Wake Atoll. And that's in addition to the Marianas. So it's going to be going across the Pacific as part of our three-year campaign. Again, as we mentioned, it's really an amazing opportunity to participate because it's streamed live over the internet. And we're going to be looking for work, new species, new places, focusing on seamounts and deep coral communities. And that will build upon some of the research done in previous years by the NOAA PMEL and the Schmidt Ocean Institute's FALCOR, which will help us tell the story of these unique places. In addition, we do research through our coral reef program every year, depending on where they're going. They'll be somewhat in the Marianas in the next year or so. And then we also have a management plan that we've been working on for a while with the partners at the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service and with the Commonwealth of the Northern Marianas Islands government. So we're really hoping that that will be published this year as well. So we've got a lot going on in the Marianas region.
Sounds like you guys have a busy year planned ahead. Now, the management plan you mentioned, what kind of things are discussed or included in the management plan?
With a management plan, we're looking at both the requirements that are established through the presidential proclamation. The president lays out what things he would like us to focus on in that area. For example, in the Marianas, one of the things that was emphasized was the need to allow for traditional fishing activities. So since the proclamation specifically highlighted that as something we needed to do in NOAA, that was taken on. That was an activity we took on, and that was done in the past few years. So the management plan will really look at those different requirements of the proclamation and will lay out a series of management activities. We also go out for public comment and review when we publish a management plan, so we'll take into consideration any additional things that the public has of interest that maybe we didn't consider as thoroughly as we should have in the plan. So it will really provide a guiding document for all of the partners to work together to protect and conserve this place.
Well, it seems like there's definitely emphasis on community engagement and making sure that that's attended to in the management plans. And there has been a general growing trend towards community engagement and these larger marine protected areas in the Pacific. Seems to be a change there. What can we expect? Are there going to be more monuments coming up or expansion of these monuments?
Well, I can't speak to the president's mind as to whether or not there will be any more marine national monuments. What I can say is that there is a growing trend worldwide for conservation of the ocean through the large marine protected areas. And governments everywhere are making increased commitments for marine protection. You may have seen over the past year the announcement of the British government, for example, to protect the Pitcairn and Ascension Islands, most recently the announcement for the Ascension Islands. And I think that really reflects the understanding that people have of the critical role that the oceans play in sustaining human life and our need to protect them. So I think that there will be more large marine designations. I don't know whether there'll be monuments or not, or whether they'll be in the U.S. But I think even more importantly, there's an increased effort to cooperate in connecting the MPAs that already exist so that they cross geographic and political boundaries and the managers can work together to protect these important places.
So what do you see as being an important challenge with the monument, you know, now that the management plan is underway or you're working towards it in 2016 and, you know, the Mariana Trench being so remote, what are some of the challenges that you face in the day-to-day or in the next year that you'll be trying to tackle?
Well, I think in our little office of just a few people, we're actually managing four monuments in coordination with all of our partners. And so it is a struggle for us to balance, you know, the various Marine National Monuments. And,
sure.
You know, everyone wants to see their place that they're interested in protected and the management plans for that. So, you know, we're working very hard to develop protections for these and develop management plans. There are management plans in place for several already. So for those, we'll be working to implement them. But what we really rely on is our partners and our co-managing agencies. U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service is a co-manager. We also work with the Office of National Marine Sanctuaries and with the governments of the various states and territories that are part of the monuments in the Pacific. So it's a challenge, but it's a good challenge, and it brings a lot of people together in support of marine conservation, and I think those conversations are incredibly important.
Excellent. Now, we always try and focus on a little bit of a career segment with the All Things Marine radio show, and I'm curious to know what exactly your role is in the monument management plans and the education relating to the Mariana Trench. What is a day-to-day schedule look like for you?
Well, I have to say that when I went into marine science and policy, I imagined myself being out on a beach every day or out on the ocean
sure.
every day, which I'm sure I'm not the only one who thought that. But I do spend a lot of my time in meetings and emails and writing, and those writing skills and those abilities to work with people are just incredibly important when we're dealing with something that is occasionally controversial and involves a lot of different people. So my day-to-day is really being a diplomat and a liaison and helping facilitate the science, the research, and the management of these remote places.
Sure, absolutely makes sense. And I just so you're not alone, I also envisioned being out on the ocean every day instead of a desk. But, you know, that's where the hard work gets done, for sure. So where can people find out more about the Monuments Program, about the Mariana National Monument, and the upcoming planned research with the Explorership?
Yeah, we have in the Monuments Program within NOAA a website for each of the national monuments. And NOAA Fisheries, out here in the Pacific, we also have a Facebook page, and we use that to post activities and events that relate to the monuments as well as the other work that NOAA does. So either of those can be found easily through NOAA's websites. And in addition, if you're interested in the Okeanos Explorer mission, NOAA's Office of Exploration and Research does have a webpage that allows you to directly connect to the live feed when it's going on, and we'll be beginning at the end of February with Papahanaumokuakea segging into the Marianas work in the mid-spring time period.
Well, we're definitely going to be excited to follow along with those cruises, and we'll be sure on the All Things Marine radio show website to post those links. Thank you so much, Samantha, for sharing your experiences with us today. I'm looking forward to hearing more about the Mariana Trench and our other monuments. Hang tight, as we'll be right back in just a moment with more notable programs to watch in 2016.
Good news from Dynavite. New Nomo Flea flea and tick spray kills fleas and ticks with no poison. New Nomo Flea is totally safe for dogs, cats, puppies, kittens, kids, babies crawling on the carpet, and even you. Because it's made from vegetable oil. Nomo Flea dissolves the hard shell of a flea or tick on contact, so the moist insides of that flea or tick just dry up.
No fleas.
Nomo Flea instantly. No more ticks soon thereafter. Best of all, no more poison ever. So as of today, you can stop using imidacloprid, moxidectin, pyrethrin, and all those other flea and tick poisons. Get all the grisly nitty-gritty about fleas and ticks, or before your beloved pet ventures out in the backyard again, order a 30 or 60-day supply of new Nomo Flea. Just click the pic of the dead flea on Dynavite.com.
859-428-1000.
DINOVITE.com.
A message from DAV to returning veterans. Thank you for doing your duty and doing our bidding. Thank you for stepping up and not backing down. Thank you for putting yourself in harm's way and putting your buddies' lives ahead of your own. Thank you for defending our freedom and displaying your honor. DAV thanks all veterans by fighting to get them the benefits and support they were promised. Visit DAV.org for free help. And again, thank you.
Welcome back. If you're just joining us, I'm Carly Weiner, the Marine Science Gal. And with us now is Professor Mackenzie Manning, Assistant Professor of Biology and Marine Biology at Kapi'olani Community College. Professor Manning runs the newly found Marine Option Program, also known as MOP, at Kapi'olani Community College. Welcome to the show, Mackenzie.
Hi, thanks, Carly. It's good to be here.
It's great to have you back on the show. You were joining us, I think, probably 2 years ago now that it's been since you've been on the show, but you have been on before, and I'm really, really excited to have you back.
Yeah, good to be back.
Well, I appreciate you calling in today and taking some time from your busy schedule. I know you're teaching like 6 classes this semester, so that's pretty amazing. But besides teaching, you've started this initiative, the Marine Option Program at KCC. Can you tell us a little bit about it?
Sure, yeah. The Marine Option Program is a system-wide program available throughout the University of Hawaii system. Pretty much every campus has one. And, of course, Manoa and Hilo have big Marine Option programs as well. And the idea is that students can get a certificate in the Marine Option Program that shows on their transcript that they have some expertise in marine science or a marine field. And this is regardless of their major. So they don't need to be a science major to join the Marine Option Program. And in fact, we encourage students from other disciplines to become a part of the Marine Option Program if they have a passion for the ocean. Especially at KCC, I'm trying to get the tourism and hospitality majors as well as the culinary and business majors to join the Marine Option Program. Yeah, and so this is helpful because obviously, we're surrounded by the ocean, and if you can show an employer that you have a little bit of expertise in the ocean, and especially if that employer has anything to do with tourism or culinary or, you know, all the things that we like to do out here in Hawaii, I think it gives you a little bit of a leg up.
And I think that's great that it's so interdisciplinary, that it's not just science students going to this Marine Option Program, but you're pulling from different disciplines and areas at KCC. Do you have any examples? You don't have to mention names of students that are enrolled in the program this year that aren't from the science leg.
Well, yeah, there are. The Marine Option Program at KCC, the Marine Option Program has been around for over 40 years in the system, and I was able to finally get it started at Kapi'olani Community College in the fall. So my first cohort of about 13 students, I had an economics major, a journalism major, and then, of course, a couple just liberal arts majors who are still kind of looking at, English as a major or sociology as a major. And then, of course, we do have some marine bio majors in the Marine Option Program because it's actually a great community, too. It really exposes you to the marine science community here on island.
And do the different students get to interact together in the cohort through either a course or activities?
Yeah, so the Marine Option Program at KCC is an academic subject certificate, which you can pursue while also declaring whatever your major is, culinary, business, tourism, and hospitality, what have you. And it's 12 credits of required coursework. And there's four credits of classes you kind of have to take, like a marine bio class or an oceanography class, and then one credit Marine Option Program seminar. And so that's how everybody gets brought together. Here we have a cohort of students from different majors, but they all have one thing in common, which is they're interested in the marine environment and they want to somehow infuse that into their college degree and then hopefully into their profession when they go through their academic career. So that's how we get everybody to work together. So it becomes a nice community that you guys can support one another through as you're going through college, actually.
That's great. And it does sound like an important community to have. Now, you said the program's been running for almost 40 years. What are some of the changes that have occurred during that time? And, you know, is it running on main campus at UH and all the community colleges or just specific locations?
No, it's pretty much at all campuses, UH system-wide. And especially UH Manoa has a very strong program, as well as UH Hilo. And I think what's really cool is that all of us collaborate. So your courses that you would take that are marine-focused for your program, let's say you see one at Windward, for example, that looks especially appealing, but your home campus is KCC, you can definitely take that course, and it can count for your Marine Option Program certificate also at KCC. So over the 40 years, I would say what's changed is that we've just, in the last 5 years, we've just really been able to, or maybe longer than 5 years, I think all the campuses have really built strong relationships. And this means you have a strong community as well. So students get to meet students from different campuses. And because you have also a skill project that's required to get your Marine Option Program certificate, it's a very hands-on, it can be an internship, volunteer, it can be research-based. We have a Marine Option Program symposium at the end of each school academic year, usually held in April, and that travels around to the different campuses, and all students who are ready to present their skill project, they can do an oral presentation or a poster presentation. And that, again, really, it happens every year. And so students either attend or they present because they're graduating. And so that further kind of solidifies the community and the relationship between everybody.
It really is nice to see. I mean, we've even had people coming on the show working in the marine science and conservation community who are MOP or Marine Option Program graduates. And so I imagine there's got to be some mentorship there where previous MOP students now working in the community want to work with those students now that are in the program.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, there's a lot of folks who've come through the program over the years and are now either back in the UH system as, you know, researchers or professors, or they're at NOAA or they're working for Fish and Wildlife, and they are so supportive of our students, our current students, trying to help them find internship experiences or volunteering experiences through the agencies or wherever they're affiliated with. So yeah, the old-timer moppers are still involved with our new and upcoming students, definitely. Yes.
Sure. And, you know, you mentioned you had 13 students enrolled in the KCC MOP program this year. That might not seem like a lot of high number to people who aren't familiar with the program, but can you walk us through a little bit about the steps and stages of getting the program at KCC and what the long-term plans are for the program in terms of growth?
Yeah, so there was a MOP, prior to my arrival at KCC, there was a MOP program coordinator, but unfortunately he wasn't able to get the support that he needed to actually start the Marine Option Program. It involves introducing a couple new courses, especially the Marine Option Program seminar course, which is the required course for all students entering the Marine Option Program to take, which allows them to kind of get some practical skills, resume writing, proposal writing. And then we also have people from the Marine community come and talk about different internships, research, volunteer work that they have, and, you know, that Marine Option Program students can possibly use as a skill project. And so it took a couple years for me to get this going because I had to show that there was interest at the student level And then I had to show that there was a way for me to sustain the program through the community, through partnerships, and then through just my passion and belief in the program. So that's basically what took a while. And then once we got the, once we were able to show that there was student interest, and then I think also the timing was just kind of right because, you know, the marine environment is somewhat in the news a lot lately in terms of the bleaching events that we've had, and, you know, sunscreen is causing, is now a new pollutant. So there's all these interesting articles, I think. So I think people are a little bit more connected with the ocean. And so I think our administration saw that and saw the need to connect sustainability in the ocean with some of these other majors that they didn't make that connection with, especially our tourism, hospitality, and culinary majors.
Yeah, absolutely. And the seminar course sounds fantastic, too, you know, getting that real-world experience that you wouldn't necessarily get otherwise with resume writing and presentation skills. What other courses are offered throughout the program? Are there specific marine option courses, or do they take, let's say, marine biology courses that would count as credit towards the program?
Yeah, so they can take, there are, so the only really specific one is the Marine Options Program seminar at KCC. And then they are required to take either a marine biology class, which is ZO 200, or an oceanography course, the science of the sea, which is Ocean 201. And then they have to take, at KCC, they have to take 6 credits of elective. And so that can be anything from like a Hawaiian course that we used to offer that I'm trying to hopefully we can get up and running again, which is called the History of Surfing. At Windward, they have a course called the Science of Surfing. There's aquaculture courses. We have a great ecology and environment course at KCC that can count towards. So basically, there's a list of courses that count towards the Marine Option Program. And then any other course at any other campus that counts for their program, we all allow those to count. So if they take a bunch of courses at HCC, but their home campus is KCC, and those can also fulfill Marine Option Program requirements. They just have to be marine science related in some aspect, some way, shape, or form. So, and I'm hoping to, we're in the process of developing some more and getting some more marine-related course offerings at KCC specifically right now.
That sounds great. And because we're focused this month on the exciting things in 2016, aside from the new courses, what other plans are there for the Marine Option Program in 2016 or the expansion of the program?
So to keep recruiting, that's always going to be a constant focus, and just to really, because it is a newer program for me, I have a lot of work this year in maintaining my existing cohort and you know, offering maybe out-of-class opportunities to go snorkeling, to just experience the marine environment in an academic way, but, you know, where there's no lab report required or anything like that. So to have some fun excursions throughout the semester, throughout the year, and just to continue making those collaborations with folks in business, in industry, in the government, in NGOs that want to kind of uplift our Marine Option Program students and offer some cool skill project opportunities.
It sounds amazing. If I was back in school, I would like to get a marine option certificate. Now, this is one program that you're balancing amongst a pretty full course load. Where else does your time get spent? What other classes are you teaching?
yes. So I wear many hats at KCC, not all marine-based. So my official duties are the course coordinator for the majors biology courses. So this subset of Marine Option Program students who are marine biology majors eventually have to take biology classes with me. And these are usually the first round of bio or natural science courses that they take with labs that are for their major, for a science major, for a natural science major. In addition to those lectures and labs and the marine biology lecture and lab. I'm working on getting a oceanography lab organized at KCC. So we've taught the oceanography lecture for many, many years, and I'm hoping to also get an accompanying lab with that. So those are some of the things I'm working on. And then in the future, maybe a biology of coral reefs course, which would be wonderful to teach. But in addition to marine bio, I also wear the hat as the pre-med club advisor. I'm heavily involved in all the pre-med students, which is totally random. Yeah, totally separate from my marine bio background.
And
it's great.
It's nice to know all the different programs that are going on at KCC. And just explain what the pre-med club is for those of us that don't know.
So the pre-med club is for any student who's interested in becoming a doctor or even a pharmacist or even a nurse, anything in the allied health. So we take any students who just have a motivation, they're trying to complete their prereqs to either enter medical school or apply for medical school, or, you know, we have a lot of allied health programs at KCC, nursing, tech, and radiology and things like that, respiratory technicians. So any of those guys can come and join the pre-med club. We have some great speakers. We have some cool tours. We go to the cadaver lab. I'm trying to set up a morgue lab visit. Really random stuff. Yeah.
Well, I certainly would stick with the Marine Option Program for me personally, but I know that's really exciting for those that are interested in that. And just, you know, the final question is what advice do you have for people that are interested in the Marine Option Program, or maybe students that are high school students even that are looking towards next year and applying? What kind of advice or requirements are there?
Yeah, so, I mean, it would be great to get some high school students. It's a great way to figure out. What's awesome about the Marine Option Program is it's a really nice way to figure out if you're unsure of where, you know, what you want to major in, which I feel like a lot of us out of high school maybe are unsure. Coming to KCC is a really safe and supportive environment to explore what your passion is through different coursework. And if you think the marine environment is something you want to work in, starting with the Marine Option Program is a great way to explore that even more. And so you can go to our website, which is kccmop.weebly.com, so it's weebly.com, or you can email me at kccmop@hawaii.edu and get more information.
Excellent. We'll definitely post those links as well on the All Things Marine Radio Show website.
Oh, thank you, Car.
Absolutely. And one of the things, you know, I have to say, Kenzie, is that you really practice what you preach. So you don't only teach about the ocean, but I know you love the ocean. So I have to ask, have you gotten in the water yet today?
No, not yet, but I did get in the water yesterday, and it was lovely.
Excellent. Well, I hope you get some time to do that this afternoon, and thank you so
thank
much
you.
For sharing your experiences with us today.
Great. Thank you so much for having me, Carly. It was wonderful to be here.
Excellent. All right. Well, we'll take a quick break, and when we return, we are going to turn our attention to data in 2016.
Do shopping online and using public Wi-Fi make you vulnerable to identity theft? Does giving out your social security number put you at risk? Is your dog at risk of identity theft? Yes, yes, and no. Your dog has absolutely nothing to worry about. But we do live in a world that can expose a lot of personal information, and that can lead to having your identity stolen and losing everything you've worked for. That's why at LifeLock we use proprietary technology to detect a wide variety of threats. And unlike free credit monitoring services, we have a dedicated U.S.-based staff to help restore your identity if it ever is compromised. No one can prevent all identity theft or monitor all transactions at all businesses. But if you ask yourself whether you're worth protecting with the best, isn't the answer a resounding yes? Plans start at $9.99 a month, and now you can get 10% off. Go to LifeLock.com and use promo code NEWS.
Mom?
Dad?
How long should I wait for you?
Mom?
If I'm at soccer practice.
What if something happens? Will you come get me?
There's no reason not to have a plan in case of a terrorist attack.
Mom, if you're not home,
should we go to the neighbor's house?
And some extremely good reasons why you should.
Can you tell me?
Everybody should have a plan. Take 5 minutes to talk about where you'll meet and how you'll get in touch with each other in an emergency. For other things you can do to be prepared, visit www.ready.gov. A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Homeland Security and the Ad Council.
Welcome back. If you're just joining us, I'm Carly Weiner, the Marine Science Gal. Last but certainly not least, we have Webb Pinner joining us from the East Coast of the United States. Webb's from Ocean Data Rat and OpenVDM, which we're going to talk about and explore today. Webb, are you with us?
Yes, I am.
Welcome.
Can you hear me?
Absolutely. Welcome to the show.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
Webb, we are so pleased that you were able to take some time. I appreciate, especially with the time difference and on a holiday. I'm just really excited and passionate about the projects that you have. So first, why don't you tell us a little bit about what you do?
Sure. So I'm a small business owner operating out of Rhode Island. I was listening to your last caller. I actually was in the ocean yesterday, and I don't want to tell you how thick that wetsuit was. But what I do is I help oceanographic institutes better explore the world's ocean and large bodies of water, seas, and large lakes. But I don't do it through the development or the operation of underwater equipment. My focus is helping the institutes deal with what comes out of those vehicles and out of those equipment, which is a lot of data.
And can you give us maybe an example of some of those equipments and the type of data that you work with?
Sure. I've been fortunate. I've been exposed to a wide range of systems. I've worked with everything from deep water ROVs, you know, going down 6,000 meters with multiple high definition cameras and all types of sensors, to ship-based systems such as multi-beam mapping sonars, ADCPs, and let's see here, all forms of ship-based sensors above and below the water. I've also dealt with navigation, meteorological sensors, and some relatively specialized sensors, including the XPRIZE recipient, which is the pH sensor currently installed on the file core.
Excellent. So it sounds like you have to be pretty familiar with a lot of different types of data and robotic vehicles and programs. How have you acquired all this knowledge, and where did you first get your start with all of this?
Okay, I've been doing this for a fair bit. I started in 2004, and I got my start working with Robert Ballard. I actually went with Dr. Ballard to the Titanic as a vehicle pilot.
Oh, wow.
And, yep. And that was my introduction into this world. Like I said, I've been very, very lucky.
Not a bad introduction there.
And then, no, it was, I thought it was going to be, you know, tough to top, and it is tough to top. But luckily, my career is, it's kept pace. It's never been boring. I guess the easiest way to kind of talk about it, I'm just going to go east to west.
Okay.
Which is, so at the farthest east that I've been is the Black Sea off the Crimea Peninsula in the Ukraine. And I got to use an ROV to explore Phoenician shipwrecks. We're talking 1,000-year-old shipwrecks made of wood, perfectly preserved. You can still see the chisel marks.
Wow.
Moving to the west just a little bit through the Bosphorus by Istanbul, I got to work on underwater volcanoes and in the Mediterranean off of Santorini. Moving through the Straits of Gibraltar into the Atlantic. I got to visit the Titanic. I also got to see low-temperature hydrothermal vents, really, really cool structures, kind of believed to be possibly like the type of scenario that would have been like the incubator for the first forms of life on the planet. I also got to work with deep-water coral communities off the East Coast. And let's see here. So then moving to the Gulf, I got to look at some 1700 shipwrecks, possibly some sunken pirate ships. And I also got to see deep sea coral again in the Gulf, including coral that had been affected by the Deepwater Horizon spill. And I got to actually see those communities just a few years after the oil spill, and to see how they, and I'm happy to report, how they were recovering. But that was really cool to see, life fighting given, circumstances that absolutely should have obliterated life. It was fighting back.
Wow.
Continuing west. I'm an engineer, and I got to go through the Panama Canal, which it was the most incredible feat of human engineering I had ever seen. The fact that these people went through a mountain with a steam shovel, and 100 years ago, just to stand there on a ship that had some of the latest technology, both going down to the bottom of the ocean and a satellite system going in the outer space, passing through this 100-year-old feat of civil engineering. That was, as an engineer, that was really, really cool. Very special to me. Into the Pacific, I got to go to the Galapagos. I got to go to high-temperature hydrothermal vents. This was, I got to go to very close to one of the first places where they actually discovered chemosynthetic communities. This was kind of the first time that had been seen. So this is the benthic shrimp and the big tube worms. I got to actually see those for myself. That was really, really special. I spent a lot of time actually bouncing up and down the west coast of the U.S. and Hawaii, kind of in a multiple rounds in a big triangle, developing a dedicated ocean exploration platform, the NOAA Ship Okeanos Explorer, as well as developing and helping to commission three underwater vehicles, the Little Hercules vehicle, the Sirius camera sled, and the Deep Discoverer. And then the far west that I've been was all the way over to Indonesia, to the Coral Triangle, which is it's where the Indian Ocean and the Pacific Ocean mix. It's an incredibly productive part of the seafloor, this Coral Triangle. And it's been said that it's the greatest density of marine life, of coral, the greatest density of coral varieties on the planet. And because we were actually one of the first ships to take an ROV into some of the deeper places in this region, I was actually present for the discovery of, last I heard, was roughly 50 new species of life that had never been seen by man. I got to see it live, and to hear the excitement in the scientists' voices. These are the authorities on coral, and they were excited because they were seeing something they had never seen before, and I got to witness all of that.
Wow. So from all across the ocean and all these different experiences from, exploration and engineering, you really have had quite an experience and a diversity of experience. How has all of this worked into the Open VDM program that you've been developing?
Sure. So I'll give a one sentence blurb on Open VDM. Open VDM stands for Open Source Vessel Data Management. And it's a freely available suite of tools targeted at helping vessel operators better manage the data that's collected from all the systems on their ship, and which is a big problem that I'll explain. I forgot the second part of your question.
So, all these experience playing into the Open VDM program that you have, how do people use it, and what gave you the idea to develop it from all these experiences?
Thank you. While I was at sea, and I'm working with all these scientists and all these different missions, from marine archaeology to corals and hydrothermal, the research vessels, they're not cheap to operate. They're very, very expensive. And if you have the opportunity to use a research vessel, you want to get the most out of every hour you're at sea. And that means the second you finish one task, knowing exactly where you need to go for the next task. And so at that point, we don't know what we're going to find. It's exploration in most cases. And so you need to make an operational decision based on data that you've collected up until that point. Well, if you don't have a way to efficiently comb through that data, you can waste a lot of time or even miss a critical piece of data that would give you the best idea of where to go next. And so it's the data management and kind of what OpenVDM is focused on is helping is helping that searching process, kind of, you know, being the you know, what Google is to the internet, kind of being the same, the analogous for this plethora of data that's collected on the research vessel.
Well, it seems like a very useful tool that obviously there's a huge need for. Who uses the OpenVDM program that you've developed?
So OpenVDM, it hasn't been around long. It's only been around, I guess, 2 years. And the current users are the RV Falkor operated by the Schmidt Ocean Institute and the RV Endeavor operated by the University of Rhode Island. A previous version, kind of the beta version that was developed prior to, before it was even called OpenVDM, is actually installed on the NOAA ship Okeanos Explorer, the ship that I used to sail on, as well as Dr. Ballard's DD model.
Excellent. And we had Samantha Brooke from the Marine National Monuments program on the show earlier today, and she was talking about the Okeanos Explorer and how it will be going to Guam this summer. So how would a ship like that use OpenVDM when they're going out to sea? How do they link all that data together?
Very good question. So each sensor kind of, it's generating its own type of data. So, and think of video as a data. So cameras, you know, recorded video, that's a data set. The mapping data created by a multi-beam sonar system, that's a data set. The meteorological sensors, the navigation, they're all data sets collected at different parts of the ship in different formats with different file names and directory structures, and it's a real distributed system. What OpenVDM does is both OpenVDM kind of it's like a traffic manager. It sees all that, all the data scattered throughout all the ship, and it directs everything very organized into a single directory structure that's consistently organized cruise to cruise to cruise to cruise, so that someone wanting to see multi-beam data or wanting to see video, they go to one spot. The files are laid out logically. They can very quickly get to exactly where they want to get to and make an informed decision about where the ship needs to go next to continue the mission.
Excellent. So we only have a couple seconds left here, Webb, but I definitely want to know, what is planned for 2016 with this program and how is it evolving?
It is definitely moving forward. There are a couple of ships that are very interested in using it. Unfortunately, I can't tell you exactly because I'm still kind of working. I don't want to speak too soon. But it is actually being slowly adopted larger by a larger and larger community. And it's also there's a lot of interest in it from the people that deal with long-term data archival. So after the cruise is over, and the data leaves the ship, it needs to go to an archival facility. And the groups in charge of getting it from the ship into the archival facility, they're very interested in OpenVDM to see if they can't use that organizational structure that OpenVDM provides to streamline the process of getting the data in an organized manner, fully cataloged, searchable, into these national repositories. And then, so ultimately what we're trying to do is we're trying to shorten the time frame between when data is collected and when it's publicly available to the world to be used for unknown discoveries.
Well, we're certainly excited to see where OpenVDM goes and who starts to use it in 2016. And we wish you all the best of luck. I'm looking forward to using the program and seeing what comes out of it. So thank you so much for taking some time to be on the show.
Very happy to be here. Thank you for having me.
Of course. I'd like to give a special thanks to all my guests today for joining me, and a special thanks to the Hawaii Institute of Marine Biology. Look forward to seeing what other exciting programs and marine science comes out of 2016. Please join us every month for more and about all the different things in the ocean. I'm Carly Weiner. Now get out there and enjoy our ocean planet.